Welcome back to another edition of the Red Leaf Fitness Podcast, a show dedicated to bringing you stories, interviews, and conversations about living a healthy, resilient, and productive life. I'm your host, Sean Blinch, and I want to thank you for making time to listen to this episode today. And if you like what we're putting down, we would love it if you would follow, rate, and share this podcast. All right. Now let's get down to business. Welcome back to the Red Leaf Fitness Podcast. We are back. Back on the air. Back on the air for all the fans.
For the people.
Oh, it's been a while.
Yes.
It's been a while. It's been a minute. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly how long, although I do think it's probably in the 6 week to 8 week area.
I see your radio personality.
Yeah.
Still here.
What do you mean? This is just who I am.
Mm-hmm.
Just me being me, Michelle. So the last podcast we did was, I think there was like an Ask Me Anything. And then after that, I interviewed my friend from CrossFit Wonderland about her experience doing her first Ironman. And she's now actually training my father-in-law.
Really?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. They did their first fight gone bad.
And no way.
Yeah. It's super cute. And
that's cute.
They're just a great match. So they're doing well over in Montreal.
That's cute.
Yeah. So let's get down to business. So We have a couple good points to hit here. Let's start with a general idea about how Red Leaf's doing. So how do you feel like Red Leaf's, what's going on at Red Leaf?
It's good. Classes are growing and we're seeing old faces come back, which is really cool. It's fun to pick those relationships up again, even though it feels like you see them like 3 days ago. So that's cool. We're getting a lot of new faces. It's good. Things feel good.
I know I say this a lot, but I seem to feel like it's important to, remind ourselves that we were in this year still in a lockdown.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It feels like a lifetime ago.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But if you look back at this time last year, I don't know exactly, but we probably were in a lockdown.
I think we were getting close because we were open leading into Christmas, I think, and then we had to lock down in December.
We were locked down again in January.
Yeah. I honestly, I can't remember. Maybe I've blocked it out, but yeah, we've not yet been open for a full year, which is crazy.
So yeah, I'm just, I'm so grateful to be able to sit here with you and just accurately say that our membership is growing. Mm-hmm. There is a light at the end of the tunnel for us.
Yeah.
There always was. But instead of it being fumes of hope, it's actually tangible data we're looking at and seeing growth trends.
Yeah.
And so it's great. And, we made it as a community, the membership, the coaching, Red Leaf's whole management squad, we made it that feels good. So let's get on to some other news.
Should we address the enormous elephant in the gym world right now?
It may be an elephant or may not be, right? People may not even have noticed.
People have noticed.
Maybe not.
I'm telling you.
So the elephant in which Michelle is referring to is that I have removed myself from all social media. So let's talk about it.
This is how I learned. Michelle, I've got a job for you. Red Leaf Instagram.
Yeah, basically. Basically, yeah. Yeah, so we'll go to square one I'll sort of lead up exactly what led me there.
Yeah.
So I made the decision probably five.
Maybe just over a month ago?
Yeah, a month ago to get off of Instagram for a couple reasons. And first and foremost, I want to highlight that it's important to me that my reasons for leaving it were not about or rooted in shade and negativity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That was really important. And although I'm not going to shy away from being critical of some aspects that are very true when it comes to Instagram and the rest of them, context matters. Mm-hmm. And so it's not an opportunity to sling negativity towards something.
No.
So that, first and foremost, it wasn't because I have a big hate on for social media. So it was more that, I was looking ahead, or actually I had started a new phase in my life that really, ushered in this new zero free time element. I felt very overwhelmed, and I thought, if I'm going to have a hope in hell of getting through this, I really need to be surgical about how I'm spending my time.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing that kept coming up as I would think about this is like, you spend so much time on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
I also watched a Cal Newport TED Talk. I've probably watched it 5 times now about, life without social media. And so I kind of put those two things together, and now I'm reading his book, Digital Minimalism. And it's just all about, what it means to be not on social media and Instagram. And I want to shout out Ari.
Mm.
So we had been talking about digital minimalism as like just the TED Talk and Cal Newport. And then so she started reading the book, and I said, well, shit, okay, let's read it together. I'm going to read it with you. So we're reading it. I mean, she's reading it and I'm reading it, and then we talk about it every now and then.
Yeah, you're in a book club with Ari.
Yeah, it's a little book club. But so thank you, Ari, for recommending the title. I've been looking at the book for years, and I'm so glad I'm finally reading it. And am I rambling? If I'm like,
isn't that what we do on podcasts?
Yeah, I guess. It's like, yeah, Sean, we know you're not on Instagram. Nobody cares past like the 45-second explanation, and you're like, 11 minutes in. So.
But how does it feel not to be on? Like, did you notice an immediate change or?
Yeah. So I could tell you, like, if you're really hoping or needing we all have free time, mm-hmm. right? And it's a good thing. We need that freedom. We need that time for the mind to down-regulate.
Mm-hmm.
And my problem was in those little moments where I needed my mind to down-regulate, Instagram would upregulate it.
Right.
And I knew it was a problem. Am I going to come back on it? I don't know. But because I have established a relationship out of like neutrality to it,
mm-hmm.
if I come back, great. And if I don't, great. It's not something that's now forbidden.
Yeah, like this big toxic thing that you've decided you're never going back to. And
Yeah. Right? Like nothing mm-hmm. is so coveted as that is which has been prohibited. And right. I haven't set these rules for myself. Mm-hmm. But right now it's working for the current phase that I'm in. And it's imperative that I stay focused on my tasks.
Mm-hmm.
And
of which you've got a few.
Yeah. And so far it's working.
Good.
But some of the quick things that I noticed is that like every single time I would open my phone, my thumb would go to the area where the mm-hmm. icon was, and I would try to open it and it wasn't there. And that's eerie. Like it's spooky
mm-hmm.
because I feel like I didn't make that conscious decision. It was subconscious, and my body had a muscle memory.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about what happens when I open my phone, and you're right.
Yeah, you can test that by just like moving the map, the icon.
I did move it, and then I moved it back.
Right.
Yeah.
I also think I kind of developed a little bit of adult, and I want to be very careful. I'm not trying to self-diagnose here or, you know, sound paranoid, but I felt like I had a problem. I felt like I had an attention deficit problem.
Okay.
That I feel like I developed some sort of attention deficit issue.
Like you were no longer, you weren't comfortable not looking at something or watching something or?
So for example, like let's say I was reading something and it challenged my mind, or like let's say I was trying to like complete a task, or second my mind would come up against some adversity, I would take the opportunity to pick up my phone and scroll Instagram.
Interesting.
Yeah. So the second I didn't want to do a task, like it could have been anything, could have been paying a Rogers bill, like, ugh, boring. And then I would open up this thing, and then like, how often are you doing that? Yeah. Why are you doing that? And so I don't think everybody has that problem, but I did. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the things that I noticed, that I can pay attention to things longer. I can read books longer, and that, again, I don't think everybody has that issue, but I did. So that was one thing. I also noticed that when I'm taking a photo of my kids, which I do obsessively,
obviously.
I'm constantly taking photos and videos.
Very cute children.
I don't think about it from a framing standpoint.
Oh, interesting.
I remember Christmas last year, all the photos I took were from a standpoint of how cute is how can I frame this?
Yeah.
And instead of just like taking the photo and moving and forgetting about it, and just, you know, I have that keepsake for later when I go through my photos and And so now I don't think like how can I curate this on Instagram? Right.
That's really interesting.
I also think about it athletically. It would seep into my mind if I'm on a run, or I would think about how I'm going to be posting this and what this means.
Right.
What are people going to be inspired by this? Mm-hmm. I would think about those things.
It's very interesting.
And I don't, I think it's well-intended, it's well-meaning. Mm-hmm. But I think these are growing out of Sean's ego.
Right. Yeah. What are people's opinion of what you're doing? What's their opinion going to be? Mm-hmm.
Me pushing the last kilometer on something is in some way, whether it's a minor or a major, was tied to what people are going to think about it.
Right.
If I'm going to excel in Ironman, because I don't want to just become an Ironman, I want to be a good Ironman. I cannot be tied to something as fickle as what other people think.
Yeah.
It has to come from a way deeper place, and that is within me.
Yeah. Yeah, it's too hard. It's too big for it to be dependent on other people's perception of it. Mm-hmm.
I would also notice if I did Instagram stories, this was one of the first things that I stopped a long time ago. I would look at the data and I would look at who's looking at it, how many people looked at it. And I would note that, oh, well, this frame got, you know, X amount of views. This frame didn't. And then I would think, oh, is the frame that I put up that didn't get as many views not as good, not as important? So then I started to kind of give myself a report card, and like I gave myself a grade. Like,
yeah.
Oh, well, this photo of X and Y, oh, people didn't like it.
Right.
And that started to matter. As if it matters. Mm-hmm. As if it matters.
Yeah.
So these, like that was one of that was the easiest thing. I was like, okay, well, I just, you know, Instagram stories and the data associated to it just sort of set off strange, unnecessary thinking for you. Easy.
Yeah.
Got rid of it. No, no problem. Now on the flip side of it, there was so much about Instagram that I loved. The meme culture.
Mm-hmm.
If, yeah. If you and I have an inside joke, we would, you know, could send each other memes yeah. about it. And I miss that.
Mm-hmm.
There's totally, that's one of the most excellent things about Instagram.
Yeah, I agree.
Just like the, what Instagram excels in is like the modern comedic landscape is very much about timing.
Yeah.
And nuance.
Yeah.
And subtlety.
Yeah.
What I'm learning about teenagers is that like they communicate in subtleties, and that's very much Instagram comedy on Instagram
yeah.
and the rise of meme culture is the more subtle it is, the funnier
the
it is.
The better it is. Yeah.
And then how it weaves in like pop culture of TV, you know, scenes from this totally applied to that scenario we lived through and went
yeah.
through and like, So I miss that for sure. Mm-hmm. I do miss following like my favorite athletes and stuff. I miss following, seeing what like a lot of our, like our network is up to and stuff. But there's a big but with this. What I noticed is when I see a member or I see somebody and I legitimately don't know what they did over the weekend,
mm-hmm.
it feels way different to ask
yeah,
when they tell me they did this or that was their workout or that like it hits way different.
Yeah. You're actually learning about someone versus just seeing a snippet of them on mm-hmm. Instagram and being like, oh, I already know that so-and-so
yeah.
did X over the weekend. I don't really need to ask.
You're backfilling context on a preview. So you saw what I did on Saturday. And so now you're going to be like, oh, so I saw you did that. I'm like, yeah, okay, well, let me just backfill that for you. So here's what it feels different. I'm not going to say that it's better or worse.
It's certainly different though.
It's different. Yeah. Well, maybe I will say it does feel better. It feels a little bit more organic and
does it feel more genuine.
Yeah. I feel like I come out better. Like, I feel like I'm like actually excited.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, fuck, you did that? That's like, that's pretty rad.
Yeah.
Tell me more. Like, I'm more curious.
Right.
And it's fun to be curious.
Yes. Yeah.
So I should probably shut up in the, you know, in hopes that I'm not trying to sell people or tell people to get off Instagram. I don't think that people need to do that. We can be critical of something and love it at the same time. You know, to be really clear, Redleaf maintains an Instagram and I want Redleaf to maintain an Instagram. And yeah, Michelle has to run that because I used to do it. Now I simply cannot. And she's doing a far better job than I ever did. It's just, it's in the being in the fitness industry. It's just part of how we communicate. Yeah. It's how we update. It's not the only way we update, but it's a
major one though.
It's part.
Or yeah, it's part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
but it's important that people know you didn't block them on Instagram.
Yeah.
You
thank
just
you.
Removed yourself
yeah.
from Instagram.
In case anybody was like, oh, what the heck happened to Sean? And like, for God's sake, I would never have blocked a single person. Unless you had it coming, then you know, that's yeah. a whole other.
Well, that's different.
Yeah. But no, it was very much from a, it started from a point of time saving
mm-hmm.
strictly.
Yeah.
And will I come back? Maybe. Maybe not. I don't know.
Time will tell.
Yeah. Does that feel?
I think that.
Do we
I think
does
so.
That feel? Conclusive?
I think so.
All right. Well, where should we move next?
Why are you so pressed for time, Sean?
Oh, yes. Thanks, Michelle. I feel like I'm like blabbing here.
It's your podcast.
Well, it's Red Leaf's podcast.
With Sean Blinch.
All right. Well, I'm going to ask you some questions after I hit this next one. So,
this next one's important.
Yeah. So the reason why all this started to make sense of some things is that both Michelle and I are considering the next 5, 10, 15 years of our professional careers and trying to add on professional services to our life's opus, which is fitness. Mm-hmm. But as everybody knows, fitness is a really broad and general topic and includes so much. And so we are looking at ways to help more people. So, we're looking at school, and the way things shook out is my school started first. I am in an SSW program at George Brown, which is social service work, which is a precursor and a pathway beginner into social work bachelor's, and then from there, social work master's. Now, am I going to go and follow that path strictly? I don't know, because where I want to end up is in the psychology world.
Right.
I want to be able to help a broad spectrum of people from many different walks of life go through life's excruciating seasons, because we know that nobody will live through life pain-free. And all streaks come to an end. That includes winning streaks and losing streaks. And this the speed and pace of living in today's world, I believe everybody needs somebody in their corner.
Yeah.
And so you and I identified that. That's one of our favorite things about what we do, is just being in people's lives in a very meaningful way, not just from the counting reps, fitness accountability.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm at. Do you want to riff a little bit about where you're at?
Yeah, I just finished my application process for a master's in counseling psychology, which will obviously go very well with kind of what we currently do, where we see our professional life growing in the future. So hopefully I get into that. That would start in January. That's completely online. So it won't really impact Redleaf in the truest sense. Like I'll be able to do both kind of at the same time without impacting my day-to-day job. So fingers crossed I get into that.
Go on.
What are you doing?
I'm just looking at some volume, because you're, if you look at the, like, if you look at the audio file that we're recording, my voice is just like this lot, like this enormous.
Yeah, but you have radio voice.
Wavelength, and yours is like this tiny little.
Because you have radio voice. I'll put the mic closer. Is that better?
No, I think the volume is going to be totally fine. It's just like, how can I just turn? Because in our, like when we. It's called post-production. So in our part of the things that we pay for with our podcast hosting is they master the thing. So it raises.
Oh, like quiet people?
It raises the quiet wave forms and shrinks the loud ones. And so they're closer together and they're less dynamic.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. It's done with all kinds of audio.
Oh, that's cool.
All podcasts, music, movies.
Well, there you have it.
There's a little nugget.
Yeah.
There's a little piece. So, yeah, why don't you just talk a little bit more about basically anything that doesn't require me to talk?
That's far too open-ended for me. I need a question.
Let's talk a little bit more about why you... Why you're investing and committing to the counseling side of things.
I think it's what we currently do anyway. It's not, we don't count reps. I happen to be excellent at counting reps, but
I am not.
You are not. It's not a skill set.
Do not count.
Nope, you don't.
Clients are all like, mm-hmm, preach.
Sean's clients count your own reps.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, thank you for that.
But it's what we currently do, and I want to get better at it, is kind of the big picture thing. But I feel like to really make an impact with people we currently work with, to reach new and people who might not otherwise feel like they can come into a gym, I think it's a different avenue to get myself in the room with those people who I know would benefit from this, and from being in a gym environment and grouping those two things together.
Mm-hmm.
So it's another way to, I guess, to kind of meet those people. But I think at the end, like when you really think about what we're actually doing here, you can't just focus on the physical. You can't, right? There's going to be a skill that a client has a lot of trouble with and doesn't want to practice for whatever reason. Or someone comes in off, just feeling off and not quite ready or willing to do what I'm asking them to do. And there's a whole host of reasons for that, right? And it's not just the physical. So I think we're in a unique position to have very close, trusting relationships with a lot of people. And I want to be able to do a better job at, or just learn more and how I can make a more meaningful impact with those people.
Mm-hmm. Well said.
Thank you.
I think that's exactly what we are trying to do. And there are many forms of personal training.
Mm-hmm.
There are the form of personal training where I just want a drill sergeant to just grind me into the ground because I find it difficult to get to those levels of intensity on my own. And so there's like that. And then there's also the kind of personal trainer that is very much like a hairdresser or a bartender. Mm-hmm. And it's somebody pretty removed from the general nucleus of your life that can provide an opportunity to just be an ear and to genuinely care. And so there's a therapeutic element to that I think is extremely important and ever more important in our current day and age. There's also a blend of those two things. And then there's also this emerging need of someone whom you're describing who has a legitimate, trained academic background in managing the complexities of life.
Yeah.
Everything from harm reduction to trauma processing to
grief, to all of the things that our clients are truthfully, and everybody I know is working through something.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Whether it's kids, family, personal things.
Yeah, their profession. People
are walking around carrying enormous levels of weight.
Yes.
And I think that's never before. In many ways, we're the most privileged cohort ever simply because of the technology we have. Like your phone makes you the luckiest cohort of people that ever existed. However, there comes costs with that.
Yeah.
And people are carrying enormous levels of stress now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's new.
Yeah.
So we need to find ways that we can manage this.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think fitness is an excellent way to manage it.
It is.
The benefits of fitness on stress management, on figuring out what you're capable of, building confidence, all of those things, I don't know that there's anything better than fitness for that. We're designed to do really hard things, and that's what we do in here every day. And everything, every single really positive thing that has come out of my life has been at the tail end of something bad that's happened. And we mimic that in the gym by doing really hard shit all the time. Mm-hmm. But I think only focusing on that is you're missing the context and why somebody needs that. You know, why does someone need to come in here and feel like a rock star? How do you coach someone through the really hard stuff, through the skills that they don't know, whatever? Like, how do you do all of that? And why are people coming here in the first place? Mm-hmm. And I think that's the piece that the fitness industry often misses, is the mental, emotional, psychological side of it. Mm-hmm. And why people do what they do and why we need what we need.
That's right.
And I, again, I think we're in a very lucky position to have built the relationships with people where that you've developed the trust to allow that piece of it to people to be willing to go there with you. Mm-hmm. And
well said.
Thanks.
So I think if that's the first time somebody's hearing that from us, I think people get that.
I think so.
You connect fitness and wellness and therapy. They're all within the same sphere of themselves. Mm-hmm. And so it seems to make a lot of sense. And, you know, even when I'm in class and I'm talking to classmates or my professors, they get it. They get it. And it's like, oh, okay. And so I do feel like we are on a track to an emerging market.
Yeah, I think so.
Not to just like, you know, put a price tag on things, but I think we're on to an emerging service.
Yeah, I think so.
That completely aligns with our values, mm-hmm. as people, and it's closer to what we've always strived to do as personal trainers and vis-a-vis through Red Leaf.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Than ever. And it's just, mm-hmm. we're at the beginning of it. And maybe in 10 years, we'll look back on this podcast and be like, listen to them. Listen to them. I also do want to highlight that there is an inaccessibility that comes to personal training, mm-hmm. and CrossFit. And I'm excited to be able to work towards a solution where we can offer, yeah. our services to marginalized communities. Yeah. This is something that was really important to you years ago, mm-hmm. and inspired me. And now what I'm going through school and learning all about, mm-hmm. Just the incredible nuances of society and how, you know, lenses of which we view society.
Yeah.
I'm really inspired to be able to do that. So if we do this thing well, I will feel successful if we can help people in all walks, yeah. of life.
Yeah. Which is ultimately has always been our goal.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So why don't we wrap that up there? We're doing well on time here. The next piece on our update shoe is, I wrote some notes here. My writing is horrendous.
It's
what does
so
that
bad.
Even say?
It's so bad. Thank God for computers for you.
Like
it's not good.
Hogwarts. Hogwarts reels. Twill. I don't even know what I. I don't know what that was supposed to say. So we're going to skip that bullet. Perhaps remember what it was.
I'll come back to it.
And let's talk about your half marathon. Hey-ow.
Sean, I think I'm an endurance athlete now.
I think you are.
Yeah. Did two endurance things this summer.
Yeah. You did a triathlon and a half marathon.
Half marathon.
Mm-hmm. So, how do we feel?
Well, I've come back to life since the half marathon.
Yep.
Which I don't want to say it sucked my soul because it didn't, but it was a very unique feeling of fatigue and mood interestingness.
Yeah.
Which you can check in with Jeff on.
Yes.
Indeed. But it was honestly, it was, the triathlon was the most fun athletically I've had in a very long time, and I loved the training for it. The half marathon was the most fun athletic environment I have ever been in my entire life.
Mm-hmm. Talk and about that. Why?
I've been doing sports since I was very little, super competitive. Nothing has even come close to the environment of a half marathon or a marathon. Mm-hmm. It was incredible. Like right from the beginning, when we were standing on the road, absolutely not even close to where we're supposed to be because we couldn't even get in, like past the little barricade. It felt like there were like a million people on the same street as you, which was a little bit scary for me. But like it was incredible to just know that every single one of those people have been training for this event for however long they've been training for it. They've been doing at least something similar to what I've been doing. Most people probably did more. Some people probably did less, but you've been doing the same thing, working for this exact moment. Mm-hmm. And it was incredible. Mm-hmm. And then you get going, and it took us forever to get going. I don't know if that's normal or not.
Very normal. Takes forever.
Yeah. We got going, and like we were just looking down. So I ran it with Alba and Tiago the whole time.
Shout out to them. They did amazing.
Yeah. We basically held hands the entire race, mm-hmm. Which we can talk about because that was a pretty incredible experience too. Mm-hmm. But just, I remember we were, I don't know, like 1 kilometer in or even less than that. And we're going straight down whatever street you started on. And then this entire sea of people took a left down, I guess going across Bloor. It was the coolest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And like that was where the first like big crowd of people were there to cheer you on. And I knew people go to cheer, but when complete strangers are having like a full-blown party on the street, they're there probably to watch one person, but they don't give a fuck. They're there cheering every single person who ran past. It was incredible. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was awesome. And I'm sure this is strategic and I'm such a rookie that I'm like, wow. What a coincidence this happened. But like every 2.5 kilometers or whatever, there's these like speakers. Tiago didn't even wear his headphones. Like there's music going on the whole time. At like every point where you felt like you wanted a little bit of a boost, there was a party.
Yeah.
It was just great.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think the coolest feeling or like the best spot was unfortunately the point where the marathoners had to keep going. And I did think about you and I was like, oh my God, we're almost there and Sean is halfway there. But I swear to God, going under the gardener, it was like, and the echo of the music and there were like run groups lined up across the street and then you hang a left and go up. I think you finished up Young, like running up Young Street.
Yeah, is that Young? And then what do you do? Do you take a...
And then you took a quick left at City Hall.
Right.
So I think it was Young, but whatever street's going north-south there. And it's kind of a cozy little street. Like, it's not super wide. And there's like thousands of people, like, packed like sardines along the side of the road. And everyone is screaming at you.
Yeah.
And, like, it was the most encouraging, and complete strangers are yelling your name from your little like name tag. I was telling Daniel, I'm like, you honestly felt like you were playing in the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. Like it was incredible.
Yeah.
And like, we didn't put up a great half marathon time and it did not matter to those people at all. Mm-hmm. Like you may as well have been first in the race. Yeah, it was incredible.
And can we just have a moment for Karen and Phil?
Okay. So
Can we just talk about it?
Yeah. So we were running down. I think Karen and Phil said they saw every single person. So they weren't running. They were there just like strictly to cheer on Redleaf people. And I was running, the three of us were running down, I don't know, across the Gardner or some shit, and about like 17 kilometers in. And I see this little sign with a skull on it. And I was like, that skull is so familiar. Like, what are the odds? And then I looked at the sign. And I was like, what are the odds that says something about Leafs on it? Like, what a coincidence.
Yeah. Because in their street clothes,
yeah,
they kind of can, you know, it's not immediate.
It's not,
yeah. They just,
it's
you're part of the crowd.
Right? Yeah. And so I looked over and I was like, wait a second. We're Leafs.
Yeah.
That's us.
Yeah.
So I yell, it's like, Phil. And he turns over and then like, it was just, and then they hopped on their bikes. Cause I guess my assumption is we were the last group they needed to see. So they hopped on their bikes and I don't know, rode out in front of us and then jumped off and were out there with their signs again. We probably saw them, I think, 3 or 4 times. It was awesome.
They were incredible.
Yeah. Yeah.
It takes a very special type of person to take a day out of your mm-hmm. life, and everybody's life is just so busy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have a kid.
Right. They yeah. had a million things they need to do.
Yeah.
But they came out to get, mm-hmm. to support and to yeah. get people fired up. Like, that's just.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was so awesome.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. How did you feel? What was it like crossing the finish line?
Yeah, it was. Honestly, I was so happy that the three of us finished it together. We didn't train together very well, but without even really mentioning or like overtly talking about it, I think we had all just decided, I'm talking about Alba and Tiago, we had just decided we would run it together. And then about a week ago, Alba and I were chatting and we were like, okay, what are we going to, how are we doing this thing? My plan was to do a combo of like a run walk. Cause my hip isn't great with long distance and it makes my knee feel like shit. So I was like, okay, I'll run walk. And that should kind of help manage that. And Alba and Tiago were like, okay, well, we want to run the whole thing. I was like, okay, so I'll just try and run the whole thing. And that really became like the only goal was to, for us to run the entire race. All three of us, the furthest distance we've ever run in our entire life is 12 kilometers. And we did that a week before the race.
Amazing.
So, and I don't want to hear it about that wasn't the right way to train. We know.
Hey, no, not necessarily.
We did that we had reasons for doing that. So we hit the 12K mark and all three of us were like, yeah, we just PR'd our longest run ever. Now we're in single digits. Okay, perfect. Whatever happens, happens. But we did. We hit our goal. We ran the entire thing. We had like, it's interesting running with three people, right? Because like if one of you goes to the bathroom, you're all waiting.
Yeah.
Right. So it really does kind of impact things. But it was so cool because we would check in with each other all the time. Like, how's your knee feeling? How's the hip? Do we need to slow down?
Yeah.
And like me and Tiago had to fix our shoes because our toes fell asleep because we tied them too tight.
I hate that feeling.
So annoying.
I know. I know.
My toe was like non-existent.
Which really matters because you need your big toe to be flexing.
Yes.
Yes. It has a big chain reaction mm-hmm. that gets amplified over distance.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we had to stop and like Alba didn't give a fuck. She was like, okay, we stop. And one of us had to go to the bathroom. We're like, okay, we all stopped.
Yeah.
So it was just so special doing it as a group. And if one person needed to slow down, we did. If one of us felt like we could pick it up, we checked in. We all decided, yeah, okay, we'll go at this pace. And then the last kilometer, we were like, we definitely turned CrossFit. And we're like, well, obviously you sprint the last kilometer.
Yeah, it's in running, that's called finish fast.
Oh, okay.
Finishing fast. So
we did that.
It's CrossFit and endurance.
But it was good. We ran a negative split for the race. So that was pretty, that was cool. And then we sprinted the last bit, it was cool because we could see each other looking around to make sure that the other two people were still there. And so we did that and then we made sure we were all together and we crossed the finish line at the exact same time.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at our scorecards, it's the exact same to the second.
That's so cool.
And that was the piece I was the most happy with.
Yeah.
Because I think it's easy to be like one of us is feeling really good or one of us is feeling really bad. And it's like you kind of become solo at that point. Mm-hmm. So that was really cool. It made it really special doing it with them.
Will you do it again?
Yeah. Yeah. I might train differently. I might not. I might.
Yeah, like, you know, it's there's so many different ways to train for things. We all respond to programming differently. We have to weigh in the other things that are going on in your life.
That was it. We had to weigh in my other goals. Mm-hmm. And strictly, like, just dedicating a lot of time to running, it doesn't feel great on my joint just because my hip is a little bit effed. Mm-hmm. But it actually doesn't, it's not in line with my body composition goals, you know.
One of the most important things about a really good endurance program is that you have to assess its efficacy, efficacy based on the preservation of the athlete. Yeah. So the not getting injured, the not feeling like crap, the feeling like you have momentum going, you have to have a sense of winning and progress. That's a key performance indicator, not others. Like those are the processed indicators that indicate success. So that's why I was like, you know, the longest thing you guys did was a 12. That is absolutely not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah.
Because you did the lion's share of the training ahead of time.
Yeah, like my training was like a lot of sprinting. So I did a lot of interval stuff, but shorter distances. Like we talked for most of the race. So that felt like, okay, my lung capacity is okay at the pace I'm going.
Yeah.
But my major concern was if I put in a lot of distance before the race, is my hip going to be okay for the race? So...
Yep. And if you were to do more zone two stuff, maybe that would have been like way too long of training. It would have broke you down.
I think so.
So there's just way too many ways to approach programming, and endurance seems simple because it's like, oh, this is like monostructural. It's like one thing, but is it?
It's not.
It involves a lot.
Yeah.
It involves a lot. So,
and how did your race go? So at the most incredible point in time, when we hit the turn left to go to the finish line.
Yeah.
You went straight.
Yeah.
And so you did it again.
I'll give you my quick race report. So I went into the race not feeling my fittest.
Okay.
Because since school started, so doing the triathlons all summer, I was lean. Mm-hmm. I was light for me. Mm-hmm. I'm a big frame person. Guy. And super fit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you had like four lungs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
School hit, and I actually put on about 10 pounds.
Okay.
And the way my body works, like that's not 10 pounds of like fat, right? Mm-hmm. That's, you know, I've definitely put on some, but I put on water with that.
Right.
So 2 weeks ahead of the race, I was kind of hitting this point where I was like, okay, I know how to balance two children working full time because it's really important to me that I'm still here for to be your business partner and to be there for my clients and balancing school and training. So I didn't know how to do all that. So I didn't do training. Something sacrificed and it was training. So my priorities were Red Leaf, school, and my family.
Yeah.
So, but whatever, I don't care, whatever. Yeah. Like I'm not, you know, so I had no problem with that. But anyways, there was a cost to that. And so because of that sacrifice, I don't think I was at my fittest, but I spent 2 weeks still putting in the distance. And then I was able to claw back some of that fitness and go into it feeling relatively confident. My goal was 4 hours as like goal one. Goal two would have been like 420.
Yep.
Goal three would have been like 430, 440.
Okay.
Because those three were numbers that I would want to hit for my Ironman next year, okay. Like my full Ironman. So I wanted, that was really important to me because when the wheels fall off and things get dark in my Ironman, which I know they will, mm-hmm. in my shorter triathlons, they do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I it's extremely important to me that I have that something to hold on to. And I say, you've done one of these before. Mm-hmm. That's going to be tremendously important for me. Not all people who do Ironman think it's necessary or helpful to do marathon, but I think it's going to be helpful for me. And so that's why I did. Mm-hmm. So we meet up ahead of time. We're at the Sheraton Hotel. We're having a lot of fun. We see Lisa G, big hugs. By the way, she's like one of the best huggers ever.
Yeah. They're so like legit.
They're kind of squeezy.
Yeah.
You know, I like those.
Great. It's like a real hug.
Yeah. People hug me and they're like,
like, you're not going to break you.
Yeah.
You're like, big guy.
Yeah. Just come at me with
it. Yeah, get in there.
So.
Be more delicate with me, please.
Sure. So it's, yeah. So we're hanging out. We're chatting. It's Tiago, Alba, yourself, me. The vibes are good. Mm-hmm. Everyone's kind of nervous, but nobody's like being weird, you know, which.
Nobody's being weird, or me and Alba are being very weird.
You guys were a little bit weird, but not like, you know, it was fun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, you guys, but yeah, first there was a bit, yeah. But the vibes were good.
The vibes were great.
You guys were like real, real fired up. And so that was fun. Oh, who am I? And Karen.
And then Mike showed up with
for crying out loud, his friend. Yeah. So that Karen is the most experienced of us all. So we were able to ask her questions, you know, so she was a great resource and she's such a rock. And then Mike showed up and he had his friend. And so we had this good energy going and it was nice. And so we get out there, we were stretching in the downstairs lobby of the Sheraton and we got a little bit behind and you guys all went to your corral. I think you guys were all together. I was like three corrals behind you. So I went all the way down to like Adelaide, I think.
Jeez.
I don't know what the street was, but anyways, I didn't get past the start line until like 15 or 20 minutes.
It took us a while, but
yeah,
if you were behind us, yeah, mm-hmm. it's an eternity.
I was way. So yeah, race kicks off. Everything's feeling good. I've got my run backpack as everything in it that I need in it. And my music's hitting right. I'm feeling good. Everything goes well. I see you guys on the run, which was fun.
That was fun.
It was cool to see you guys. And like when I ran up, you guys were just in great spirits.
Yeah.
I could tell. I was like, oh, I love this. You guys are having so much fun.
We're having so much fun.
So that was fun for me to see.
But you run past us and we're like, God, Sean's running fast. Do we need to go faster? No, we're good.
Nah. And so, yeah, everything was great. And we get up to the 20-kilometer mark, as you were describing before, mm-hmm. and they corral us. Yeah, they corral us left. The left people on the left go and finish mm-hmm. the half marathon. The people on the right are just getting started, basically. So you're at your halfway point. And I can't explain to you the heart-wrenching feeling it is. Because you're part of the finishing energy. Like people are so fucking happy. Yeah. It's like, yeah, done. Yes.
Yeah.
Brunch. Whatever.
Brunch.
You know? And you can't not be part of that. And so I had my heart ripped out of my chest as I'm running and the herd thinned right out. Yeah. I was running with 50 people and next thing I knew it was 7. And I'm like looking around. I'm like, all right. So this is us, eh? And those are pretty much the 7 people that were around me the whole time. So
we did take a moment for you. We did.
I appreciate that.
Coming up to it, we're like, guys, Sean's going to keep going. We're going to be done in 5 minutes.
I appreciate that. So that was the first mental battle. Up until that mm-hmm. point, like no real issues. I felt like I was going, I felt like I needed to be going faster, but I was having discipline knowing. Mm-hmm.
And your body was feeling okay? Like,
oh, I was 100%.
Joints are good.
Joints were good. Great. 100%. I was feeling great. And by the way, the course is beautiful. Like it's
great.
And then, but at that point, it all goes downhill.
Yeah.
So then they send you basically down, I believe it's Front Street.
Okay.
And then you go up Bayview Ave or River or something.
Yeah, you take River to Bayview.
Yeah. And then it's an out and back. So you go up River and that starts to not be fun.
Yeah, I could see that.
And then because what you start to lose is visibility. Like when does this end? Yeah. You start to, so, and that visibility and hope are tied together. So as my visibility dropped, so did my hope. And we're coming back on River and I'm starting to like, things are like, I'm starting to be irritable. I'm starting to be like, you know, if somebody runs past me and they're too close, I'm like, how could you possibly think it's okay to be an inch from my shoulder? Wow.
Wow. Wow.
Isn't my mood obvious? I'm hanging on by a thread. Fucking a little respect.
A little space here, please.
You know? It's outrageous where your mind goes. You're just such a fucking... So... Oh, shit, it's 8:17. Okay, so I'll wrap this up real quick.
No, that's okay. I have 13 more minutes.
Okay. So so the out and back, and then you come back, and then you do another stupid out and back that goes up, you know, another, and it's the same feeling, and it just wouldn't end.
Mm-hmm.
And then they send you up all the way to the end of the beaches on Queen.
Yeah.
And then you finally turn around. At that point, I had lost, at around the 25 to 27 kilometer mark, I had lost all use of my left calf. And
that's a huge deal.
Yeah, this is the best way to describe it. You know the feeling the first time something Charlie horses on you or spasms? Mm-hmm. It's really jarring.
Yeah.
You think in that moment you're actually going to tear something and you have these horrible thoughts. When that happens for an hour, it's not jarring anymore. Now you're just like working alongside of this thing and you just learn to be okay with that. Yeah. And so one of the biggest assets I had going into this race is I had done a lot of training in triathlon, which to me, triathlon, the essence of triathlon is problem management.
Yeah.
Immediately things go wrong and they consistently go wrong. So it's about how do you show up when the wheels fall off?
Right.
So from the 27 kilometer mark to 42, my wheels fell off over and over and over. And I just had to figure out how to put them back on and what that looked like and managing my hope. But you figure it out. And, you know, Karen Virk and Phil Virk were a big part of that. It was so nice to see loving faces that just wanted, that were rooting for me when I was dark. I wasn't all that exhausted from a body standpoint. Yeah. I was just running inefficiently. Okay,
you're on one leg.
Just this weird hobble thing. Mm-hmm. And it was weird. Like I started to like find different areas to heel strike or toe strike. I was like, oh, if I land on my heel, it gives me 30 more seconds without a cramp. And that's all you have.
Yeah.
And so I would like run on that heel and hobble it until that really started to hurt, like I was going to grow a bone spur. And then I'd switch it up.
It's like, okay, toes it is.
Yeah. And then I would like, I'd see a photographer and I'd be like, oh, could you fuck off? Do you understand the shit I'm managing right now with your dumb camera and your lens? And I have some hilarious race photos. I have this one where I look like the Scream mask. My mouth is just like open and I'm just like, what were you feeling in that moment?
Alba sent me one of the two of us where we literally look like we're chasing a cake. Like, yeah. Like we look like we've just found the best piece of food and that's what we're chasing.
Yeah. Like, one of the best signs that I saw was that pain is temporary, race photos are forever.
Yeah.
That's true.
The one that hit home for me was you did all this for a banana.
Yeah.
Which I didn't even get.
Seems like a lot of work for a banana.
But Sean, you know, when you group the inevitability of shit going wrong in your Ironman and the experience of running, I don't know, what's that, like 20 some odd kilometers with one leg, like, right, you've got the experience now. So that shittiness will serve you well in your Ironman.
And that's exactly why I did it. Mm-hmm. And so getting through something when you have every reason not to is, if you can eke that through, mm-hmm. on the other side of that is just exactly what you're searching for.
Yeah.
And that was worth it. Mm-hmm. And I would hold on to that. Be like, everything that's going wrong for you is worth it. And hope is the strongest human emotion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Hope's all we need. So, and it doesn't matter if it's just like a minuscule amount. So anyways, I will speed this up. So I get through, I think I've blocked out some parts of it, to be honest. I think because part of me has a bit of amnesia. Like, how did I even get to that last two kilometer mark? So I couldn't run more than 50 or 60 meters. When I was in the last 500 meters of the finish line, I couldn't run more than 50 or 60 meters without my leg completely seizing on me.
Oh, Jesus.
So, and Lisa has this funny picture of me. I had my music on and she was screaming and yelling and she has this funny picture of me like with my phone out. And she's like, "What were you doing with your phone?" And I was like, "Changing the song." The song was, I kept having these bad songs. I was like, no, not this one, not this one, not this one. So, yeah, we finish and I cross the finish line and I almost burst into tears. It was such an emotional experience. And they put the medal around my neck and then they handed me a tinfoil cape, which I promptly tied around my neck. And I tried to exit so I could, you know, so Val could come and pick me up at an easier location.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't let me.
No, you had to sneak.
I didn't even sneak.
I know
you and Alba sneaked.
Yeah.
I couldn't. I was probably too big for that sneak hole. Wouldn't have fit.
No, you'd have been stuck.
Yeah. That would have been good. Stuck in my tinfoil cape, shivering. So I took the long way out and then I went and got a banana bag of chips for some reason. I don't know why they were handing out bags of chips. Did you see those?
No, we snuck out first.
Yeah.
I was like,
get me
out of here.
They were like healthy Doritos. You know, these companies like Siesta chips.
Fuck off.
Thanks for the healthy Doritos. Yeah. These are just chips.
Yeah. It's just what you need.
Yeah. Okay. Anyways, I hammered half a bag of those and my banana and my apple. And, it was an incredibly transformative experience. I was telling Jen, the story yesterday that it was similar to, in some of those triathlons and it was similar to my first triathlon where when I jumped off that boat with Jeff and Daniel. So just us three?
Yeah.
I feel there was a transformation where I shed a layer of who I didn't want to be and dove into the water who I wanted to be.
Right.
And each event has a new element of that where I'm just like one layer closer to the real me, and that the real me is who I want to be. Is who I want to become over this process. So there you have it. You got
That's
5 minutes.
That's pretty incredible.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's pretty. That's worth it.
I appreciate it. And you know, and to do it with you guys, you know.
Yeah, it was watching you guys at the Gravenhurst Triathlon was incredible. With Dana and Shauna there and
yeah.
Like Dana's kids and
that was such a special
that
day.
That was like
I'll never forget it.
When you guys came out of the water that day, it was my heart was going to explode. Yeah, that was incredible.
Yeah. And for those that are listening that we've been in your ear about you doing that try, we will support you. We will get you guys there. And I'm telling you, nothing can prepare you for how good it feels
yeah.
to jump in that water, conquer it, and get out of the water.
Yeah.
And you come out of the water a totally new person.
Yeah. Yeah, you do.
It's just such a special thing. Mm-hmm. Let's wrap it up there. You got 4 minutes till your client. Thank you for this update show. And you guys can expect more regular episodes from us.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
All right.